Who's the guy that owns the drugstore there? Oscar, well, I'm going to see Oscar in
Bush. Bush.
Yes, oh yes. He married Gertie Harwood. You remember Gertie and Mona Harwood?
Yeah.
Baby.
That
boy.
Yeah.
How's Oscar doing?
Very well. Oh, he's won any number of awards.
Let me tell you a story about Oscar.
You remember me reciting Michael's funeral at Braddock.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you a story about Oscar. I still tell it to my kids.
Oh,
he first came in Michael Lewis. Michael Reese is a technician. The day he came, we were doing an acute operation at the dog.
No.
He was a new man. We told him to come in the laboratory and to watch. And to help wherever he could.
Doskin
was operating.
Doskin upstairs, way up there.
He was operating. I don't put a spot over it. There was a girl there, a nurse, and she was handing instruments to Doskin. Oscar was supposed to take the instruments from her and wash them in alcohol and return them because he worked out like he was doing, and he was removing the liver from the dog.
Instruments get pulled back.
This was an acute operation in which the dog died. They wanted to clean the instruments. Oscar's job, to be a little helpful, was to dump the instruments in alcohol and get rid of the fat. We approached the critical part of the operation where you're lifting the liver away from the main blood vessel, the
main vein of the body, the vena cava. Very careful, very clean. Off the blood. Gets to the point. The nurse wants all the instruments very clean so Soskin can work. She takes the hemostat and the lance and she hands it to Oscar. She says, when I say the word, I want this because this has to work fast. Comes a critical minute. She turns around. She says, Oscar. No Oscar there. What the hell? She takes a couple steps and she stumbles right over his body. The guy passed out. Side of blood just disrupted the whole damn thing. That's how I remember. I mean,
I'm glad you came.
And yet, you remember, 3 weeks later, he was doing his own experiments.
You remember Schwalter?
Sam?
Yeah. Look at this!
Well,
I got
him.
Ellie calls.
Charlie. He was with me in the repertory.
Oh, that's right. Well, Charlie is dead. Yeah. Sam married.
You know
Gerald,
I
was
Robinson?
No,
Howard Gover.
Yeah.
He had the WPA
orchestra.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, Gover. He's in L.A., I think.
Yeah.
No, I saw him. I was friends with his
brother. Charlie married that seventh day.
He comes from Shenandoah, Iowa.
They had a divorce.
He's critic now in the L.A.
He's out
you
in California.
Did you run across anybody?
I don't know what he's doing.
Sam got his scholarship.
I heard other people who knew him. I didn't know him. I've heard people mention him that I know, but I didn't know him.
Where's that? I went to work for Michael Lee Vic was our shining star boy. He was the number one. He graduated from University of Illinois and on top of the class. Nobody could touch
him. Hey, did you know Benny Side?
Benny Side, no.
What that man, we knew.
You'll have to forgive us, but we're hungry for the names of these people. We haven't seen them in years.
What that man made me?
Huh?
The man you got.
What?
The other man.
The other man?
Yeah.
Ronnie Gilbert.
No.
Wins Rocky. Scott's Turkey.
For a while, you want to be taking
your. No, it's just not Pete. Not Pete Seeger. Not Lee Hayes.
Gilbert Green?
Gil Green?
What do you look like? You got a mustache?
Ready, Helen?
No.
Who's here?
The painter who painted fishes.
Mitchell Sephora.
Do you know Sephora in Chicago?
She's a painter. You're trying to guess who she's thinking of?
Yeah. Very close.
Martha, who's she talking about? That's
Another friend.
We had fires, you know, a series of fires. And then the war broke out, and I felt that they were selling it for nitrous sedatives.
You
want
like coffee?
She
used to come around
to come. That's right. See, I got a. Now I remember where I used to go up there in that corner building, the building there up to the third floor there.
Remember Ralph? Yeah, he used to be there. He lived in Greece.
Yeah. But Oscar tells me, Roger Levine.
I can just be your grandma.
I'll be your grandma, so I'll be your other grandma.
Okay?
You got a card?
Now, this is a dirty story about everybody. This is not a dirty story.
A dirty story about Odette.
Yeah.
No, this is a heroic story about Odette.
Yeah,
I'm
sure
for
that.
He became a wealthy man. Now, what's he doing?
I got a call from.
We was coming.
I told Meridol, part of it is that Martha I've been feeling very depressed. And one day she says to me, I think something's going to happen. So I said, what do you got, a pipeline to God? I get a call from Columbia Pictures that say, what do I want to make a picture of? Head and run for 3 years. So I go down there and they ask me what I'm made. I tell them and they say, well, Max Arnold, he's the town guy there. He thought maybe you could make it for less. So I said, forget it. And I walk back and they say, well, just a minute, where are they? I'm just a middleman here, you know. I'll send a teletype to the coast and we'll see what happens. And I said, Martha, she's on the side. And I say, well, they evidently want to bargain with me and depress my salary, and I just refuse to have it depressed, even if I'm blacklisted, then a nickel won't mean anything. So the next day, one of her friends who works with her, a social worker, was around, and I was just telling her the story of how I got two calls in one day after not getting any calls for any work, you know, and that maybe something's going to happen. And I get a call. While she's there, I get a call from this guy, and he says, this is the teletype we just received from the coast. It says, Jerry Wald and Harry Cohn don't know Lou Gilbert. We know him. If he wants to fly to the coast on spec, have him fly. So I said, well, what does he mean? They say, well, we'll pay your way there and back, and but it's no contract. I said, fine, I'll go there. So he says, there's a plane leaving at 12 o'clock. This is about 10:30, you know. He says, you think you can make it? And I turned to Marge and I said, Marge, you got a car? She says, yeah, would you drive me? Yeah. So I'm on this plane and it's the constellation. All green.
How do you fly, Daddy?
Oh, you know.
She can't win.
Share of all the drinks. At any rate, I write Martha. I said, this balloon is being inflated, and I'm flying with it. It's, you know, but there has to be a pinprick somewhere, and I hope I go and race her. Anyhow.
The Grand Canyon.
That's right. I was looking at the Grand Canyon. First time I ever saw it. I get there about 5 o'clock and it's 8 o'clock New York time and I call up and I can't believe the whole thing and I call and they say, yes, would you report tomorrow at about 10 o'clock? By the way, Cliff Odets wrote the picture. So I call and I say, honey, Cliff Odets wrote the picture. She says to me, just be circumspectly. See, Cliff Odets had named people before the committee, and I hadn't talked to him.
And you weren't circumcised.
I had known him.
She had young children.
Even Odets wasn't circumcised.
How do you know?
Who shouldn't know?
Well, in the Bible, they say the uncircumcised by the village.
It's a matter of
No circumcision.
Well, circumspected.
Yeah,
Ross. So, I get there and,
what does Martha say?
She said
they're
all females.
She says we got two children to feed.
So, she tells a couple of friends of mine, and they send me a telegram saying it's important that you work.
That's your
dumb thought.
I don't know what that means. So, I just ignore it. And I go down the next day, and I meet Harry Cole, Jerry Wald, and Bill William Dieterle isn't there yet. He's
Harry
gonna,
Cohen, he's been there with
it. He's going to direct the picture. So they say, they look at me and they say, gee, we can see what Odette's mean. He has a beautiful face. So I look in the mirror.
Daddy wears a razor.
So now I say, that. By the way, what is this picture? So they say, it's Joseph and his brother. So I said, well, what am I to play? They say, an Egyptian slave, the loyal servant to Potiphar. They said, the only thing is, we thought of him as a dwarf. So I cut off my legs and called me Shorty. Then they start to roar and they say, gee, it's wonderful. You know, we want him.
God bless you.
So, that's how much I expected the job. Yeah, just pretending. So, they say, sign him up, give him makeup tests, and costumes, this means it's kind of, I think Dieterle wanted him, and this then Dieterle came in and he said, yeah, it fit. So this guy says to me,
you were an Egyptian?
I was going to be an Egyptian, yes.
Egyptian? You'd be hanging.
So, Max Arno takes me down. He says, there's one thing I want to talk to him about, and I think it's salary, you know. He says to me, he says to me,
the smell of oranges.
I have a listing here for you that you were on the member of the artist committee to win the war, sponsored by the International Workers' Order.
To win the war.
It was on the Tom L. Clark's Un-American Subversive List.
Who said that?
What about it? Yeah.
Dieterle. No.
No, not Dieterle. Arno.
Arno. Who is Arno?
Arno is a guy who's responsible for signing the contracts. He's
the agent.
Yeah. No, he's the he's the talent guy who hires. So he says, what about it? So I said, well, Max, I'm not kidding you. All you have to do is just look at my nose and know that I must have been on the line to win the war list. I don't either affirm or deny it. So he says, well, you want to make a statement? So I says, no, you write it out. So he starts the whole business. He starts dictating a letter to the secretary. Starts the whole business. On the whole vicious anti-communist thing. And I say, cut it. Forget it, Max. I want nothing to do with the whole business. So he grabs me and grabs me into his inner office and he says, listen, you want me a Dutch uncle? I'm not going to let any psychotic legionnaire boycott this picture. It's a $2 million picture because you're in it. I said, I understand it. I know it. I don't have to be in it. So he says, what do you mean? I said, I want to get the picture.
situation with dignity or lose it with dignity. I want nothing to do with the whole business. So he starts to name names. He says, Lee Carlton, you know, what's her name? Larry Parks and the whole business, you know. That they're all working for us now and so on, you know. And they're more loyal to what they're doing. This kind of just stirred me up. I said, don't talk to me about loyalty. Talk to me. Don't tell me about these people. Ask me. You have to talk to me. I don't want to do it. It isn't an accident you ask me to play in a religious picture, because I'm really a religious man. I think the whole thing is immoral and unethical, and you're asking me to participate in something that I think is unethical. And this is an area that I won't even do for my kids, that I won't go beyond it. I won't step beyond that. That's one thing that I won't do. I can, you know, you ask me to rob a bank, you know, we're just going to rob a bank. Well, I can't do it. So I said, forget it. So he said, well, you aren't going to work in the industry. I said, yeah, that's right. Because I don't have to be an actor. I'm a person first. If the acting comes, fine. Movies come, fine. If it doesn't, then I work at anything else. I said, because the thing is this. You want me. I can go another 3 years. You see? I can go because you want my talent. It isn't for sale, Max. It isn't for sale. I said, so forget it. Goodbye. So he says to me, wait a minute, see old Betts. I said, yeah, I'm going to see. So I call Martha, I go out, and I call Martha, and I said, they threw the book at me. She says, come on. I said, that's all I wanted to hear. I said, it happened, and that's it. I didn't know how I was going to behave. I just, you know, listen to my heart. So I called Billy Wolf. I say to Billy, I don't know what to do, you know. So he says to me, get Ben Margolis. Ben Margolis out on the coast. So I say, well, maybe I ought to just you know, kind of relax and just get a hold of myself and just see what we'll do. So I'm staying at the Chateau Marmont. So, well, this is where I stayed, when I was with Zapata.
When you were there.
Yeah.
Was that in the United States of America?
Huh? Yeah. Sure. Yes, yes. Hollywood Boulevard. Sunset Boulevard, I mean. I pack up and I'm pulling out, and there's, I bump into Odette's. He's living on the same floor. And Cliff says, how are you?
I
say, wonderful. Listen, Cliff, I said, I'm not going to do the picture. So he says, well, what do you mean? I said, well, they asked me to add a kind of listing, and I don't want to participate in it. So I told her that I wasn't gonna, you know, attack him. I would thank him for the picture, thank him for the consideration, and, you know, for even bringing me out there. So I walk in there, and all he had to say to me is, "What? Are you a principled man?" And I said, "You're goddamn right I am." And I suddenly said, you and Kazan violated me. I said, you didn't have to name people. You could have stopped it short. Bastard. So he says, what are you doing? I said, yes. God damn it. I said, you ain't going to pull me in. And so he starts to say to me, wait a minute. Listen, there's a Theater Arts Monthly. There's an article about me. You know, he had written Flowery Peach. So they had a whole article. That's why he was a biblical expert. And he was playing music and playing some kind of... I'm sorry. But anyhow, you know, it was... And it was... he kept offering me cigarettes and... cigarettes, and
it was really wild. And then I said, "Well, why don't you get somebody else? Just, you know, there's other people." So he says, "Are you kidding?" He says, "Have you ever seen the Hollywood faces?" He says, "I want a Lou Gilbert face." I says, "You're goddamn right you do. That's right. If I were to do anything else, Cliff, you wouldn't have the face. You would have something else. You would have a Hollywood face." So he says, "It's wonderful dialogues." I said,
"Yes." He said, "All the time he was
listening, he was." So I had to get up, and he kept saying, and then he started attacking Boris Karnofsky, and, you know, why couldn't they say they were communists? Why did they have to take a Fifth Amendment? You know, and so on. And we couldn't, I didn't want to, you know, go into that. And so I left, and 3 days later, or 4 days later.
Did you go home then?
No, I stayed at Billy Wolf's, and I noticed in the paper that Rita Hayworth, she was in the picture. This is the picture that she walked out on. They've never done the picture.
What's the name of the picture?
Joseph and his brother.
Never been done.
No.
It's never been done. She walked out.
They killed my Lou Gilbert face.
They have
a
constitution.
They haven't done it.
No, they haven't done it.
Are you recording, Marindel?
Huh?
Well, you are.
Don't be. Come on.
So,
not in self-conscious.
I saw, oh, by the way, this is wonderful. I saw Ben Michael. Who was the lawyer? McTernan, John McTernan. A wonderful Irish guy. I kept calling you. Arno says to me, write a letter to us if this is the way you feel. I says, "Yes, I will. I'm going to write you a letter." He kept saying that he wants it for his, just for their files, you know. Yeah. And I said, "Oh, cut it. The Bank of America is behind it, you know, and the whole damn thing is bound to be connected. And I'm not interested. I'll write you a letter and tell you what I feel about it." So I called up Ben Margolis, and McTernan is with them. Ben Margolis was going on a vacation, and so I asked to see McTernan, and they kept delaying me. So finally I said to this friend of mine, "I think I'll go down to see them." So I go into Los Angeles, and I come to the desk there, and I remember they had a Negro gal at the desk, and I said, "Is John McTernan in?" And he was standing right there, and she looked up, and I don't know, he must have said, "Ignore him." Oh no, she said to me, "What's your name?" And I said, "Lou Gilbert." And he was moving away, and he turned around and looked. And then I came in there. The first thing he said to me, he said, "Listen, I want to apologize to you. We've been avoiding answering your call because there was a labor guy who turned red, and he had a change of heart and so on. And he's been calling us, and his name is Louis Gilbert." So we thought it was you. So he said, "I don't even know you." So he said, "Now what do you want?" So he takes a piece of paper and he shoves it over on the desk, and it says, "Are you a..." So I write,
I don't know what to... I keep looking at him. He says, write. Just write. Don't talk. He says, I'll tell you later. Out of the office, I'll tell you. So I put down no. Says, where are you? I said, yes. I'm like, yes. This is the way this went on. It seems they were bugging the offices of the, they had,
at any rate, McTernan, I wrote a letter. I wrote, McTernan, I tell McTernan that, I feel, I've got to write the letter because I'm a kind of, I'm really a, anarchistic kind of guy, and, gotta really let them know how I feel about the whole thing, you know. And I want to work very much, but I also, you know, either I want to get it at my terms, and that is with complete dignity. And I want, I don't want them talking about anything. So he says, "Well, can I write a letter for you?" After talking to me, so he wrote a letter and. I look at it and I say, you don't mind if I rewrite it? I said, because it isn't me and I'd really like to make it me. Using, you know, what I thought a lot of it, he had captured a lot of what I wanted to say. And so, in kind of legal terms, so, and I wanted to use that, but also to express it. So I walked around for hours, and I wrote this thing, and I came back, and he said to me, I think it's a wonderful letter, and I don't think you'll get the job.
He wrote the letter.
So I said, well, I'll send it in. Well, the next day, I looked in the paper, and Rita Hayworth had walked off the set.
Why did she walk off?
She walked off because she thought that the studio had set a date when they were to start the picture. And she was going to visit her daughter, Yasmin, by Prince Ali Khan, in June, and this was about now about April, and she thought that they wouldn't finish the picture in time. So Columbia, you remember, issued a countersuit saying, well, it was all hypothetical. How did she know that they wouldn't finish the picture in time, and so on? Well, anyhow, they're friends. So I called.
Anyway, now they're
invaded. I, about 4 days later, I went into Columbia Pictures to collect my per diem, $25 a day. I was away for, I was there 4 days.
Huh?
And they gave me $100 and I took a plane. And I, from the airport, I called Odette's. So I said, well, who's going to play the part? So Odette said, any one of eight broads. Any one of eight broads.
Rita Hayworth.
Yeah.
Only
said,
one thing you left out, that Cobb was playing Cobb.
Oh, yes. Oh, I said to Odette's, I said, well, who's going to play Potiphar? So he said, Lee Cobb. I said, Lee Cobb! Oh, man, would I love to play a loyal servant to Potiphar, playing by Cobb. Me, the loyal servant.
He won't be able to look at me, I said to him.
So it's a crazy, crazy thing.
But you have a beautiful today,
Weegee. They couldn't buy it.
And there isn't another one.
Did you see Lee Cobb at Studio One 2 weeks with the doctor?
A very good friend of mine.
Terrific.
Yeah.
He did a magnificent job.
He's a great actor.
He's out of age.
I gotta tell you a story. He calls up.
You remember Shane Cash?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So he calls up Shane.
Nobody's a stranger. Yeah.
No.
And then he calls up Shane and he says, "Could I come over?" Well, oh, Shane, sweet, wonderful gal, very commiserate, you know.
Sure.
So he comes up and he starts talking to her, and suddenly in the middle of his talk he says, "What are you talking to me for? Why don't you spit at me?" So Sano says, "All right, I will."
They did a song. Charlie Schwartz wrote a poem,
a song. He and Bill Wolf wrote a song about, "Look through your books, turn over, Look through your books, turn over the pages, ponder the wisdom of life through the ages. Why did they do it? Whom are they pleasing? Show me the logic, give me the reason. Anyhow, it goes like that. So I took it and I did it as a poem. And this is the way I did it. I got out of the chair and I said, if this be me. You books turn over the pages, find the wisdom of life through the ages. Why did they do it? Who are the place and show me the logic? Give me the reason.
Prices go up. Wages. Wages go down. People are hungry. Militias in town. Wall Street goes booming. Factories hung. Millions are begging for crust.
If this be reason, I'm crazy as hell. If this be reason, I'm as cracked as that Liberty Bell.
Lynching and charging and cracking the heads. Sleep of the nation in shelter house beds. Sure, DuPont's for liberty. Morgan's for peace. Talmadge deposed. Herndon's released. Moody's in prison. Insul goes free. If this be reason, the bug house for me.
Crazy! Living newspaper.
In a community house.
Well, then I did a poem that Laxton Hughes wrote in The Nation years ago called Waiting for Roosevelt. Remember that?
Oh, I think I've heard that.
This is when the NRA, you know, there was the discrepancy between the North and the South. Remember the wage,
NRA.
The wage differentials, you know, and Hughes was really disturbed, you know, the Negroes were really being... So he wrote this poem, Waiting for Roosevelt, goes about sister or something. Stay to music or become a lawyer, he says. Become a lawyer. So anyhow, he did...
Yeah, be a lawyer. You don't need any talent to be a lawyer.
No, you don't...
You know what happened today!
You don't have to have any emotional, you know...
No!
What?
Well, this is what the old man Rudolph showed up of.
Was he a Yiddish actor?
Oh, yes. He was a great actor. So he Shukra did the Molnar play Lillian. This is when he became the matinee idol. All the girls were falling, all the American girls were falling for him. His father came down to see him. He came backstage and Shukra was waiting for him. His father would tell him how wonderful he was, you know. And his father just sat there watching him take his makeup off. And he took his makeup off. He washed himself, washed his pants. He took off his clothes. And he was looking in the mirror all the time at his father, and he noticed his father looking at him. He started to put on his civilian clothes, you know, and street clothes.
Isn't that interesting? I say some business clothes.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, street clothes, and he's putting on his shirt and starts tying his tie. And the father says, "And the tie I didn't like either."
Wow! That is a damning.
Oh! Shukra tells this on himself.
I understand here.
You probably haven't. He's writing a book.
Well, that's a real Yiddish. Real Jewish.
Is that about the thing?
Should I tell the Yiddish story about the soup?
Yeah.
Anything, Ken, you heard that yellow story. Did I tell you about the soup?
Like someone I know.
I don't think so.
Yeah, this is one of the philosophes, you know. Studying the Bible, you know.
I was a sister. Yeah.
So, the yeshiva buckers, you know, they come in, decide. So he comes into Cafe Royal, he looks around, there's no one there. So he sits there and he orders a bowl of soup. He calls the waiter over and he says, "Come here." He says, "Would you please taste the soup?" So the waiter says, "Why, is it too hot? Too cold?" He says, "Please, taste the soup." The waiter says, "Well, there's too much salt, not enough salt." He says, "Would you please taste the soup?" He says, "Well, you don't like this particular kind of soup. You want another plate of soup?" He says, "Would you please taste the soup?" He says, "Well, there's a lot of one." He says, "Would you please taste the soup? Taste it." He says, "All right, I'll taste it." He says, "Where's your spoon?" He says, "Ah!" Comes to her clinic and socialized medicine and says, "Doctor, I think I'm pregnant." So he looks her over, he says, "You certainly are." He takes a rubber stamp and he stamps her. So she goes home and her husband says, "So?" She says, "I'm pregnant." He says, "You know, I think that doctor stamped me." She says, "He did what?" "Yes, he rubber stamped me." So she says, "Why, it's extraordinary. Let me see." So he looks and says, "Oh, yes, there's a stamp there." She says, "Well, there's some writing there." "I can't read it." He gets his glasses. He looks and says, "No, I can't make it out." He takes a magnifying glass. Yes. "It says, when you can read this without your glasses, call your doctor, your dude."
Time is money. Word, come on, get the act out. Get the act out. "What the hell is it?" She's got, says, "Wait a minute, give me a chance. I got it right here in this little bag." He says, "Well, get, what do you mean? You got it in the little bag? What are you talking about? What, are you kidding?" He says, "No, I got it in the bag. Right here in the bag. Little bag. Just give me a chance." She says, "All right, come on. God's sake, time is, come on now. First, I got all kinds of appointments. Get it out." She says, "All right." So he takes out a walnut and a mallet. "What are you doing?" He says, "Yeah, it's a precision act." Says, "I hit it every time." Says, "What are you get out of belt? What are you kidding me? Get out of." He says, no, it's a precision act." He says, "You got nothing else, no instruments?" He says, "No, all by myself, just the walnuts." I never miss. Precision act. "What, are you crazy?" "No, it's a great act." This guy says, "You never vary it? No hazelnuts or nothing?" He says, "No, just walnuts." So he
he just says, oh, God. He says, you know, a star you'll never be, you know. He says, all right, well, maybe I can book you a couple of New Jersey places or something. Just a couple of that's the act. He says, no instruments, no. Just the walnuts. She says, all right, wrap it up, Wade. Just wrap it up and get it out of here. All right, I'll call you. Just wrap it up. So he wraps it up and he starts going out with a little bag and a big bag. She says, wait a minute. Wait, just a minute. What's in the big bag? Aspirin. So she was going over the questions, and one of the questions was, what are Karl Marx's words in the Kremlin? She passed the Kremlin. She's been in the Kremlin about 3 months now, or half a year. Passed it every day of her, you know, this half year. She couldn't remember. So she thought, gee, I better not spend too much time on this question. I'll go through the rest and then come back to it, and if I could just kind of see it in my mind's eye here and concentrate on it, I could really get it. And she did that. She kind of thought and tried to get a sense of the building and so on. Sure enough, she kind of thought she saw it. She wrote down, religion is an opiate to the people. And she ran down, she handed in the paper to the teacher and ran down the street a couple of blocks because the Kremlin was there. She read, religion is an opiate to the people. She said, thank God.
You know that, Rachel, that the father's still alive?
Yes,
the father's still alive.
He's in Germany, doesn't
he? He's in America. He's being sued by Meyer Levin.
Meyer Levin?
Is suing you, Mr.
Why? Is Meyer Levin the writer of the
Levin,
version?
No.
Meyer Levin claims he has exclusive authority to write the play from the diary.
Yeah.
And Meyer Levin wrote a play. Which
he was in a concentration camp. He was one of the lucky people that got out, that's all. He was freed by the Russians. And the Russians came in.
Isn't one of his daughters a friend of the daughter?
What about these letters?
Well, the one letter that he received, that he wrote Schildkraut about, and Schildkraut gives it as part of his lecture, it's really wonderful. It says, a little Japanese girl wrote Frank a letter and said, most honorable sir, with the permission of my most honorable parents, I am writing this letter to you. I am of same age as your late daughter Anne Frank, born same day, same month. I, with permission of most honorable parents, offer, this was on Hanukkah, by the way, offer myself as Hanukkah gift to you, as daughter to replace your late daughter, Anna Frank. You know.
Imagine, fancy.
Isn't that wonderful? Says he received hundreds, thousands of letters. They may, it's a shrine now. The house is a
shrine.
Yeah, the Dutch government has made it a...
Well, does Meyer Levin say that it, what, it has no Jewish content?
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Well, I don't think the book had any Jewish content. So how could a play that is based on
well,
the book...
Well, how can it not have any Jewish content?
Yeah, I'm in German.
Yeah, what does he mean?
He lived
in Germany,
is it
that
he
was
a...
He was very kind to offer.
Yes, he was.
How old is the girl that plays the part now?
Very good.
Did you play, you played the Strasburg?
No, I didn't play the Strasburg.
Oh, didn't you? Is she in Hollywood now?
Strasburg, yeah.
We're
gonna try to
make
it. I thought somebody said they saw him with Strasburg.
No, they didn't see me with Strasburg. I played it the last 3 months, but...
Huh?
Yeah,
I mean, it looked a lot like, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to tell you the story about Julie Harris.
Yes.
So, I was doing the legwork for the studio, and we
what
had to, well, you know, do all the interviewing of people, you know, set up their audition to come in, you know. The studio. Kazan was observing them, and Cheryl Crawford and Bobby Lewis. So I guess Julie Harris auditioned, and Kazan said he didn't want this a mental institution, you know, he didn't want this a clinic or anything, you know. And he didn't want, he felt that Julie maybe better not come to it. He thought she was very strange and so on. So, no, I don't think so. I mean, she's as strange as I am strange. So,
everybody's strange.
At any rate, she was very shy then and very, you know, removed and, you know, it was hard to get at, so to speak. So, but there was a guy, a friend of Kazan, Marty Ritt was in on the whole thing too. So he said, listen, I think she's wonderful. I think you ought to see her again. So he said, all right, I'll see her again. So he set up an appointment, and when the day came, Julie Harris wasn't there. So I got on the phone, I called her house, and she answered. I said, Julie, where are you? You're supposed to be down here. She says, today's a Jewish holiday. So I said, well, what's that got to do with you? She says, no, Gigi, it's the Day of Atonement. And my husband wouldn't like it if I came down there. So I said, oh my God, I forgot. So I go to Kazan, I said, what are you doing anyhow? Don't you know today is a Jewish holiday? Julie Harris can't come down. It's a Jewish holiday. She's married to a Jewish fella. So he says, forget it. She's in the studio. And that's all she got into the studio.